Hello and welcome to episode 106 of the Liverpool Comedy Improvcast with me, Ian Luke Jones. This is where we get to know the people who make up the LCI community and a place where we delve into all sorts of improv topics. And today we're jumping back into our A to Z of improv series focusing on the letter G with Seki, Dave and Stu from the Oikers joining us for the conversation. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. We're even available on Amazon Podcasts, which means that you can ask Alexa to play the show. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show to give us a boost and help get our name out there. And now it's time to go off script and delve back into the A to Z of improv, focusing on the letter G. Welcome to this week's guests. We've got some of the Oikers here this week to discuss the letter G. We've got Seki, we've got Dave, and we've got Stu. Huzzah!
Hello.
Hello.
Oik, oik, oik.
You can feel the energy in the room.
I almost waved. Sorry. You can't hear a wave, can you?
Well, we'd appreciate the wave. You can still give us a wave.
We're all waving.
Everybody is waving. Just picture that in your head, everybody. Everyone here has been on the show some multiple times. And we are here to discuss all things G. So the A to Z, when I initially put the list out, which is over a year ago, I put it on some different forums and stuff. And when I recently checked, because I thought, oh, the letter G is coming up, I realized I had hardly any suggestions for G. So I posted it again, and then loads of stuff came through, and it's still been coming through. Like even today, still people are seeing it and commenting on it. So I've kind of rounded it down as close as I could to the 10-ish mark. I think we're a little bit over 10. But we're just going to discuss the things that people have said and get your take on it. So is everybody ready?
I'm ready.
Ready.
Prepared.
Okay, so kicking off our G letter today, we've got grounded scenes. So what does that mean to you guys, grounded scenes?
Well, I'll start it off by saying the first thing that comes to mind, which is, I guess, what people describe as straight-laced scenes, where things are the kind of things you will hear every day out there in the everyday world. Is that right?
Yes. I also think that it's playing the scene naturally. So just using your connections to what the person last said rather than going off into mad directions and throwing in squirrels into schools and hippos into bank accounts and stuff.
So to me, it's very much like what Stu and Seki said. It's very much a play it as you intend, that makes sense. So play it just kind of, it's nothing fancy. It's just the bare bones of a scene based off of a suggestion from an audience, and you play it just, there's maybe no, it's just a basic scene which can then potentially lead to something else.
Yeah, okay. There's a word that gets thrown around a lot, which is the word authentic. Do you think grounded scenes are closely linked to authenticity?
I think that grounded scenes come from your own experience. They can do. They can come from your own experience. And I also think that, as Dave said, they start off, I wouldn't say mundane, but it's, you know, you just bring your own experience into it of making a cup of tea or hoovering the stairs, and it'll slowly turn into something wonderful and funny. And I think it's not about, don't try and be funny, don't push the scene, just let it naturally play itself out, and those funny bits will start to come through.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean, Stu, because it's like you don't get to that point without establishing ground rules first or building a world first.
Yes.
And in that world has to be relatable. So I guess that's where the word authentic comes from. Start somewhere familiar, and then you can build something, but you've got to have something to build off of.
I would also say it can apply to any, it can apply to short form, apply to long form, mid form. Although for me, it probably works. It's probably more so in long form because you have a bit more time to flush out the scene. Whereas in short form, it's very much a case of you have to have the bait, very much the basics of who, the what, the where within the first 15 seconds. Whereas a more grounded scene can be seen as you look at your long form, you look at building all those improv troupes who do long form plays, like the Shakespeare improv and other long form, they have that sort of, they can start off in a sense of grounded way, so they can build characters, get the basics a lot more refined. That makes sense at all.
Yeah, makes sense. So if being grounded, we say that it sort of links more to perhaps to long form than short form. It links nicely to the next word actually, because the next word is games, which I feel definitely lends itself more to the short form. So games.
Well, you'd think so. You'd think that. But then again, there is also a term game of the scene. And game of the scene is a term I associate with long form sets because in any given scene or story or storyline, there is a game that's happening. And in fact, that's the one that keeps getting more and more escalated as the story progresses. And it gets bigger and bigger because of the game of the scene. So that's the first thing that clicked in my head when you said games. But I'm sure you're talking about short form games, right?
Yeah, because you totally ruined my segue from games to game of the scene, which was number three, but it's fine. We can talk about
Well done,
games and game
Seki.
of the scene, but we'll start with games.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything about the game of the scene. All I was going to talk about was my favorite game. I short form, isn't it? And they're great, and they give you structure. And something to lean on. They're like a crutch in the scene, and it really works well. And I love New Choice is my big favorite game. I love that one.
Favorite game for me probably has to be Actor's Nightmare, because it kind of gives you, it's probably definitely one of the favorite games, especially if I'm reading from a book or play, because I like the idea of when I've got that particular bit or particular part, I'm trying to be in tune with whoever's got kind of free rein in that game, because then I can sort of quickly scan through the entire book or play to find something that will match what my scene partner's doing, and then it kind of bounces, it can quite easily bounce backward and forward that way.
I'm on the same page as you all now. So yes, games. While I'm sorely tempted to select New Choice or Actor's Nightmare, I will say that my favorite type of game is justification games, which,
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
justification games. And then at the top of that list actually is What's My Line? Because I love to sort of put myself in the deep end, a random line. I love the sort of putting myself in it. By introducing the line and then saying the line to myself and realizing, oh, I'm gonna have to connect the dots. I love that. So I love What's My Line.
Yeah, I love that game as well. I love justification. But I'm just thinking about games on the whole and why I think I love short form. And I think it's because of the game element, because one of the great things about improv is we talk about how it sort of connects you with your childish self. And I think the game element is great for that. Whereas long form tends to be like a bit more grown up. Like it's kind of like a deeper art form, and there's more thought involved. And for those listening, Seki's just grown a mustache, which is up slightly. So yeah, the game element, it's short, it's quick, you move on, you have a laugh, you move on to the next thing, you don't go too deep into things. So in some ways it's kind of superficial because you're not delving into it, but it's great because whether it's good or whether it's bad, you're moving on quickly and you just get in touch with the childish side. And long form can get quite deep and intense at times, whereas short form, the games are what help keep it sort of childlike and just silly fun.
I think that games suit performances and audiences a bit better. I wouldn't say a bit better, but just especially if you're new to watching improv and you don't yet appreciate the long form, then short form is a great way in. Short form games and games themselves are a great way in, but also as an audience member, they're just great because they just click, 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 click. And like you said, Ian, silly and fun and all the good things in life.
Easily accessible.
Yes.
It's also audience participation as well. It's depending on the game and depending what the ask fors are, you're getting the audience thinking about what they could, you know, but how they're directing the game, how that particular game's going to play out. So they're having a say as to how everything's going to be for that next 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, they're a lot more involved, aren't they, in the games rather than long form. Often long form's just at the start of the show and then the improvisers just go off and make their own world. But yeah, that's great with games that they're just constantly involving the audience.
True. Yeah.
I think long form shows tend to have an audience full of improvisers, whereas short form shows, you'll have a bigger cross section of people, I think.
It becomes like a sort of gateway thing, because it's a thing that hooks people in, gives them a proper intro into what they could be doing in nice sort of bite-sized chunks of this kind of merriment that people don't do anymore as adults. And then all of a sudden, they get an idea, they see a show, and then once they're in that world, like, they can really explore it. And that's probably why it tends to be short form to long form as you go deeper and deeper into improv.
Yeah. Right. So moving swiftly on to game of the scene.
Great link, Ian. Really good. Very strong.
Let's discuss that. What is the game of the scene to you guys? How do you see game of the scene?
It's very much one of these things where it's about finding a pattern within a game. And sort of, usually the best example is with a game called Enter Exit, one of our group Oika favorites. Usually the game of the scene in that usually involves me entering and exiting the scene, usually from whatever word I get given. And it's normally triggers me going in or out, and it's that creates almost like a, like a, I don't know if it's almost like a slapstick style sort of comedy, and people are laughing at the fact that I think, oh yeah, that's what's happening. It's how many times can we get person A to come in and out of the scene or back into it?
Yeah, poor Dave never gets to say a word in Enter Exit because we always bring him in and immediately send him out again.
I think I will at this point, because I'm listening to you, to your descriptions of the game of the scene, and I realize that the reward you get out of a game of the scene is a lot higher in long form, personally, because you build together as an ensemble this amazing mountain of a game, because you keep returning to it. The callbacks build up, the game stakes go higher and higher, and you end up sort of impressing each other with where you can all take it. And it's like building, and it just gets higher and higher. It's really good, and I can only ever see that build to that level with long form.
And it's great when everyone, so you get the game scene, and then everyone's on the same page, and everyone's working towards that escalation of that weird thing or that unusual word that's said, or some kind of just building a tiny thing into something completely nuts. But everyone's cooperating, everyone knows what the game is. And it's a great feeling that as a troop, it is.
So it's like short form is like TikTok, a really good, well-made TikTok video, and long form is like a Wikipedia article.
But it is interesting that the game and the scene exists in both forms. It's just a slightly different animal.
Yeah. Well, you give them the game of the scene, aren't you, in short form, really? Sort
That's interesting. That is. Yeah, that's what's happening, isn't it? You're given sort of just a very good setup, and that becomes the game, literally the game of the scene is the game. Yeah, oh my gosh, mind blown.
As it both well, everyone's been saying, it's like you're given it very much instantaneously in short form, where you get to get the in the long form, you get to longer forms of improv, you get to draw it out a little. To a certain degree, you are given it, although you draw it, it takes longer to get there.
Yeah. So it all seems we've learned a little something about Game of the Scene there. So it seems like we've grown, which is good because our next word is growth.
Growth. Well, that segues very nicely, because I think most people think that you grow as an improviser the more game of the scenes you learn. So I get what you go where you're going with it.
Ironically, we have actually just shrunk because we've lost Stu, who's playing Dad Taxi this evening, and he's had to nip out and go and do that. But we will carry on regardless.
For me, growth can be not only from an individual improviser slash performance perspective. I always see it as like you, well, you see it. I see it as very much you grow individually, depending on the scenario, depending on the games you play, games on the gigs and that you have. Yeah, it also you can grow as a troupe, which I feel we do. You know, we grow li literally together. We grow in confidence. We grow in the bonds we have with each other, sort of being able to back each other up in particular scenes, the growth we have in that. And it's we go from strength to strength literally every gig we do, every literally every gig we do, we grow, and we know what works. We know what's a staple part of the group. We know, is this new sh you know it, we take the we take maybe take risks at saying that, oh, can this game we bring in to will this work, and we grow that way.
Yeah, and we have just grown again because Stu is actually here. I thought we'd lost him, but we haven't lost him. He's here. So we've
I had
grown.
to get my chicken thighs out of the oven.
Oh.
I could hear the beep.
So I think just jumping on what Dave said there about sort of constantly evolving and growing. A lot of the time, if people see me play the guitar, they'll say, "Oh, how long did it take you to learn to play the guitar?" And my standard response is, I'm still learning. So, yeah, I've been playing it most of my life, but I'm still learning how to play the guitar because there's always new things I can learn. And it's very much the same with improv. So, always learning with improv. And there's different ways to learn. Obviously, you can read books, you can watch webinars or all that kind of stuff. And then there's learning through doing, there's being in scenes with people that take it in a direction that you wouldn't have considered. There's watching people in groups that you're with playing out games or doing long form stuff and just coming up with genius stuff. And it's always just planting new seeds in your head. So yeah, growth is just a constant process, I think.
I think that's such an important thing to say, that you're always learning. And I love it when you say take a workshop and the person, the teacher that's leading it, is amazing and fantastic, and you have a great time. And then you go to the next workshop and the teacher is now in the class as one of the pupils, and there's someone else who was in the class previous taking the taking the workshop. So it's so nice to see leaders also learning and pupils teaching and stuff like that. And you get that a lot in improv, and you know, it's great.
The best improvisers I've ever had the pleasure of learning from are themselves perpetually learning. Like I observe them stay there and be witness to something new, and I see the wonderment they experience, and I see them, I watch them sort of learn a concept just then and there, and it's really nice to know that it never really stops. So everybody who's worth their salt in improvising are constantly growing, I think. So I think growth is really super duper crucial when it comes to this particular community, this craft, if you will.
Yeah, speaking of communities and growth, Seki, you once grew a community from nothing, and it became Glossop Improv, which is a wonderful community, both in person and online. So that is my next G, Glossop Improv. I'd like to get people's take on that. Everyone here has got varying levels of experience of being involved in Glossop Improv in some way.
I would never have done it without Jess Naptine Hodgkinson. And see, that's another thing. You grow something with people who will support you and be by your side. So that's one thing that makes a community actually just a solid pillar of like core members who will keep it going, basically. And that's what it's both a little bit of luck and a little bit of just, you know, solid friendship.
I've done a couple of online sessions with Glossop, and it was amazing and great fun. That was in lockdown. But I've also been in a workshop that was taken by the Glossop team. I think there was the three of them, and that was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. I can't remember where that was. It was somewhere in Liverpool. In fact, I think, was it the Liverpool? I think it was the Liverpool Comedy Improv Festival.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yes.
That was last year. And coincidentally, that festival is coming back around for part two in April, and we're going to be there performing a show, Fruit Smoothie.
That's right. Also, Glossop Improv is one of those communities that is both online and in person. So Glossop itself is nestled amongst the traffic heavy roads on the A57 between Sheffield and Manchester. So if you can't make it to those in-person sessions, then the online one is fortnightly on Zoom, and is carried on because of the pandemic. Started there and continues to run on a Friday night.
Yeah, that, it's its own little thing, really. The Glossop Improv group has got a very solid core group of in-person regulars and a very solid core group of online regulars. And they're all one, but they're kind of very separate at the same time. But it's still very cool to be part of it and to know that it exists. And it's a fun place for people to just turn on every other Friday, or turn up in person every Friday if they're around. And get your short form improv fix.
Yeah, for me, I think, I mean, obviously, online was my first exposure to Glossop. And then I think the first time I got to see the likes of Seki, Jess, even yourself, Ian, performing as Glossop Improv, I think was that the Fly and the Loaf in Liverpool, I think?
Oh, yes, we did, yeah.
That was the thing Emma put like friends of LCI together and said, like, invited Glossop around. And that was my first sort of live and in concert experience of glossop. And yeah, it's, then I think again it was at it was in Chester, I think, the next time after that.
Oh, yeah. Another cool thing about Glossop Improv, from my perspective, is it was Glossop Improv that very first gave me my opportunity to facilitate a session. And then that sort of spiraled. I did a lot more for them, and now I regularly do things with Seki on the online sessions. But then, you know, it was those experiences which helped give me the confidence to go into Flinch and Funny Bone with Seki, knowing that I can regularly run sessions. I am a teacher by trade, so like I don't have an issue with teaching, but teaching and facilitating and sort of working with adults, working with children, they are slightly different things. And yeah, Glossop Improv gave me the opportunity to really sort of see if I had what it takes to be in that position, and I'll be forever grateful for that. Okay, well, that's all very positive. The next word is actually kind of a negative word, but it is an important word, I think. And the word is gatekeeper.
No one likes a gatekeeper.
No one likes a gatekeeper, but thankfully, I think I'm learning in the improv community that we don't let a gatekeeper stop us because we can just do what I did, which is just build the community anyway. If you build it, they will come.
And there's so many communities out there as well. Find another community, or find more than one community. Find three communities and go to them all.
Yeah.
But don't let a gatekeeper tell you that you can't do improv. Everyone can do improv.
Yeah, I think with the way it's set up in America, that sort of instills a mindset in the way it's done over there, because it's so territorial. And it's like, oh, well, if you want to do improv, like, this is the way that we do it here, and you have to start right at the bottom. I don't care what other training you've had, like, you have to learn to do things our way. And it's not so much that way in other places in the world. From what I can gather from research and stuff, there are some countries that have sort of followed that American way of doing things. The British way is not that way, but there is still a bit of a territorial thing where there are people that can be a bit gatekeepery in certain aspects, but I think it's a lot more prominent in the US, at least that's my take on it.
Well, this is why I really like that I've encountered improvisers like Jay Sugo, and the attitude that he espouses is one of just welcoming. So I love that. I took a course, and that this is how I discovered the kind of brand of improv that he champions is really good. So that's one shining bastion of goodness in that part of the world. And there's also, meeting like Carla Dingle, people like that who love something more than the structure and the hierarchy things that I've heard of. So knowing that they exist is really cool for me, because then, it's a shining light of niceness.
Any more thoughts on gatekeepers?
I just also there's different types of improv as well. So I need that. There's a few. There's a couple of American styles, you know, and there's British, a few British styles, and so as well as having more than one community, sample all the different types of improv, and you'll find one that suits you and what you like to do and suits your life and outlook. You don't have to rely on someone else to tell you whether you're, you know, good enough to do improv. It's yeah. Don't like gatekeepers at all in anything. Music, art, make me mad.
Unless they're an actual gatekeeper and it is their job to like keep the gate.
But even then, Ian, I think, you know, open your gate. What's the point of being a gatekeeper if you're going to keep your gate closed?
Excellent point.
That's true. Right, so we're moving on to our next G, and this one is group mind.
Oh, I think we're all having a conversation in our heads.
Oh, we were. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Stop doing that, Oikers. We need to speak out loud.
Group mind. So it's just being able to collect, like particularly for me, group mind is being able to, particularly when we're, I guess, organizing a gig, sorting out a gig so that we can all collectively say, this is great. This would be great for this show, that although it might not be necessarily great for another show down the line, we can, we know we can, we know we've got an extensive like back catalogue of games that can, that we know we can draw on and think, yeah, these games will collect as a group, go, yeah, these games would be great for like say a half an hour set here, half an hour set at this gig, and then collectively as a group we can all unanimously group then sort of whittle down, say, okay, no, maybe we'll have this game as a backup just in case we happen to be, we've got time, in case we've got time in this case, rather than, yeah, that's kind of my sense of what a group mind's about. We can all say, yeah, these games are great, let's keep them, let's say who feels comfortable hosting this particular game, and we can also, we all in sort of can be very slick with hosting it, with running the games, timing it, and knowing when to end each game, sort of, so the gig as a whole is smooth and slick.
Yeah, because we built up a group mind, haven't we, in the Oikers? Kind of went from, choosing our games, but also in scenes and stuff. I think sometimes, a lot of the time, we're on the same page, even though it is a very silly page, but we are on the same page.
And also, I think I found myself exploring this with a class of absolute beginners who were still finding their feet, and it was really cool discussing peripheral vision with them because it's the idea that we know who hasn't been speaking for a long time or who hasn't been a part of the dialogue in your scene. And I realized that this is something that the Oikers do naturally and instinctively, which is the group mind knows who needs to speak next, who needs to be given the space. So any group could do that, but a group mind is something you nurture and hone like a muscle. So even if you don't begin with what you feel is a good peripheral vision or group mind way of thinking, you can train it. Anybody can, I think.
It's such a joy when it happens. What, I've forgotten the name of the warm-up game. What's the warm-up game?
Mind meld.
Sorry, Ian, say that again.
Mind meld.
Yes, obviously, because it's mind meld. That makes sense. So that's why it's called that. But it's such a joy when it happens. And I need to explain mind meld now. So you're in a circle, and it's word association. And basically, two people have to say the same word at the same time. And when it happens, and those two people said it, just the room erupts because it's such a joy that we're all thinking the same. Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Time. That's a mind. Well.
I will just say about being on the same page, probably my least favorite types of games are the ones where you have to speak at the same time and say the same thing as people. I don't know why. I really struggle with those games.
I love those.
I know most people do, but it's a real challenge for me.
Oh.
I'm going to do a warm-up session in our next Oika thing. That's just that, Ian. Just warm-ups and those kind of games.
I remember the moment that particular game became a game of the scene in a long form set. It was amazing. The two of them just stepped in, linked arms, and started speaking. I don't know how they did it, but it must have been a look in the eye, but they started talking at the same time. It was gold. It was really good. So it was like group mind, but Yeah, it was just really good. I still remember the moment.
And I think it's great to watch as well. So I know you don't like it, Ian, but watching you trying to speak the exactly same thing with a partner in your face, and the words get elongated, and it's very funny. Even if you don't like it, we like it at your expense.
Okay, so that'll lead nicely onto the next word, actually, because the next word is gifts. But we have to say goodbye to
Gifts.
Stu. He's got to go. Oh, we're sad. Goodbye, Stu.
Well, we don't actually know if he's leaving for real. He might actually come back.
Also, Stu leaving is the opposite of a gift.
Yeah.
Okay, he's gonna be playing Dad Taxi. He may be back, depending on how long we talk. So,
Which
gifts. Let's talk gifts.
I always like, for me, I always like sort of focusing on listening to what other people say in a scene, particularly if it's one of those where you've got to take something from the scene and use it in your bit. So it could be like Monologue Thief, for example, where even though you've got your own unique monologue that you're talking about, someone else could go to mention something, and that is essentially a gift to you that can lead your I was going to say argument then, but lead your discussion down a particular route. And that's one way of taking a gift and take it and running with it. And running, that's one example I find when thinking of a gift.
Gifts. I think that's everything about improv because you improvise because you're comfortable, you improvise because you feel creative, and you improvise because you're building something. So if someone gives you a gift in a scene, whether it's a really cool location you want to be in, or a crisis you both face, or a really unique way you're both going to talk to each other. That's what makes you walk away from a scene feeling good. And that's only ever going to come from your scene partner because that's the strength of the scene, the chemistry between the two of you. So a partner to me is a gift. The scene partner is the gift. And the only thing that would stop that from being a gift is, the things that would destroy creativity and collaboration. So, yeah, someone just needs to be my scene partner, and that's already a gift.
Yeah, definitely. Improv in many ways is the gift that keeps on giving as well, because it doesn't matter how many times you play a particular game, it's never going to be the same. There's always going to be different people playing it, different ideas coming into it. So it's just a constant gift.
Another gift in improv is the audience. It's like particularly like I think it was in the Robin Hood International Festival. The audience were very much again sort of on point. They were very much thinking, okay, let's gift you because when we were playing there, with really good scenes, really good prompts. It's like, and I think also when it comes to jams as well, seeing them involved, particularly if it's like the first time and they come away and they're like, wow, that's brilliant. Never thought I'd actually do improv. That's a gift.
Yeah, I think improvisers in an audience give good suggestions as well, which is always a gift, because if they're not improvisers, they think they're being really original when they say garden center or something like that, not knowing that everyone else has said garden center a gazillion times before. Whereas improvisers in the audience will often give you a much wider variety of suggestions, sometimes big curveballs, but definitely stuff that's going to give you something new to work with a lot of the time, and not just sort of, oh, the same old suggestion again.
The audience definitely is another character in the entire thing. I think as much as your scene partner is in the scene with you, the audience is as well. So they create so much of the thing. The setup really relies on the audience. So yeah, well pointed out, Dave, because the audience is another member of the scene, basically.
Now the next word is goals. So I'm interested to get your take on this one, because I thought this was quite an interesting suggestion.
Yeah. Personally, do you mean like what our goal is as we improvise?
I have no interpretation of it. It's just the word goals that it's been written, and it was written quite a few times, which is why I decided to add it to the list. So I'm just interested to see what that word sparks in you when you hear it in improv terms.
Oh, in that case, a goal is when I do a game or a scene or a story with somebody or some people, and we successfully build a world together, and something happens in that world, and there's a lot of really good feelings afterwards, and you feel closer to the people you've just improvised with. That's generally my goal from scene to scene, so that it's quite therapeutic for me, this doing this whole thing.
Goal for me is usually when, say, we've got a gig coming up, and just everything falls into place. Now that the goal is to come away. You know, if you come away, the goal is for me, if you come away absolutely buzzing, absolutely, you know, collectively we've nailed it, that for me is a goal for me. Whenever I, you know, as a group coming away from a gig and knowing that everything's gone great, that's always like a number one goal for me. When we go into, well, whether it's us as the Oikers going into a gig, whether it's going to a drop-in and just going in and just being, you know, everything's falling into place, and it's making you just, particularly with the drop-ins, it's helping you maybe forget the woes of that day. You know, you've been in work, you've just feel, you know, you're feeling a bit, you know, things have been a bit stressful, but then you think, oh yeah, I've got improv later, and it's a goal to get. I see that as a goal to go, yeah, that's going to make me happy.
Yeah, cool. I think me as a performer, my goals are always to have fun and enjoy what I'm doing, because I always feel if I'm having fun and enjoying it, then hopefully then the audience or those I'm performing with are going to be having fun and enjoying it, because it's a relaxed, fun environment to be in. And my goal as a facilitator is always, I guess, to hope that the people that are coming to my sessions are having fun and enjoying it.
And my goal as a performer is to ensure that at the end of the activity, the person who was in that game or scene with me will come away feeling really nice about improv, like they've taken something from it and it feels good. And another goal is to never stop learning. So it's connected to growth, because I think I get a lot of sense of fulfillment if I've learned something, because I'm always like, what can I learn? What can I learn? And I'll share a little quick story about just the other week when the sessions I run for children for Stand Tall Improv CIC, we were playing a good old game of pillars. And there are these kids, they're the pillars, and then the two people in the scene are doing the scene, and one of them got given a word. She poked her pillar, and her pillar gave her a word. She stared at her pillar, and she said, "New choice." Which to me is like, wow, that's, I had never seen that before. And there was this person just thinking outside of the box and just being so creative and so, just so amazingly just creative and fun filled. And I just thought, I hope I never lose that kind of, I don't know what to call it. You might need to help me with the word that describes this kind of attitude, this sort of, it's like a enthusiastic curiosity slash attitude, something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty much nailed it on the head. I don't think I can improve on your wording there.
Ah, in that case, I hope I never lose that, or if I don't have all of it, I hope I keep learning.
It's funny that you mentioned the youngsters at Stand Tall there, because the next word is definitely something I experience a lot when I walk into sessions there, and that word is giggles. Giggles and improv. What's your take?
Giggles for me is kind of like even between, not necessarily between performer and audience, because that's the sort of standard. You get your giggles, you get your laughs from what you do, your reaction from an audience, as a performer from an audience. I think also between performers as well. I think when everything is, I think when you get giggles, laughs from performers, I think you know you're doing something right. Which I think it's like when we're on our own Zoom, Oika Zoom, I think hearing the laughs, hearing the giggles from your peers, so to speak, that's just as rewarding, I find. Because you've got like that group mind, you've got a group mind, something obviously we were mentioning earlier, and it's having that, knowing that what is, it's a sense of, for me, it's a sense of fulfillment, knowing your peers have, are finding what you do, it's funny, it's encouragement. That's kind of my take on giggles.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean, Dave, because a giggle is almost universally, if not universally, the ultimate sign of a connection that's been made. When two people are giggling in a corner, they've connected over something, and mentally they're like, oh yeah, like they're having a moment where they're connecting, whether it's humor or an idea they both agree on, or a kind of ironic look at something, at the world around them, they've connected. And so when you get laughter from an audience because of something you did in your scene, that is a connection with the audience. So I totally get that. It's made me less resentful sometimes if I just walk down the street and I hear two people giggling. I've stopped thinking of that as, hey, are they laughing at something? Are they laughing at me? In the insecurity of my youth, that's how I reacted to a giggle. But now I'm like, oh, I will celebrate that moment, which is a universal symbol of two people connecting, a giggle. So it's like, never mind what they're giggling about, they've giggled. So that is good for humanity if people have connected.
Yeah, I think at the Oikers sessions, we often end up in fits of giggles, and it's often from things that are unexpectedly funny. Because I think, yeah, there is that, oh, we're doing an improv thing, we're probably going to do or say something funny, and you're going to laugh because you're watching it. And that's the thing. But a giggle, yeah, it's like a deeper connection between people when they're laughing, because maybe something's gone wrong, or maybe someone said something and it was taken completely out of context or something, and it just presses a different button. And yeah, it's something that can just be shared by those two people or a group of people between them. I think sometimes, perhaps, particularly with children, when they get the giggles, it can start to become distracting because they won't stop giggling, and you're trying to take a session on, and they're still giggling. So as much as I love to giggle, there becomes a point where you have to be like, okay, let's actually get back to what we're doing.
I think also giggling is a sign of fun. So the difference between fun and funny is rooted in the kind of giggling, maybe. But because when people are having fun, they tend to giggle. Giggling is an expression of fun. So I like that the approach to improv being fun is the number one goal for me, more than funny. Funny, people will laugh at something you said, but giggle to me means connection from something fun.
Excellent. Well, that was very well explained. I understood every word of it, unlike the next word, which is gibberish. Your
I'll let
thoughts
Dave go. I'll let
on
Dave
gibberish?
go first. Oh, I put him on the.
Gibberish for me is always, it can be something that can lead to giggling, because it's obviously a one particular, there is a game whereby all you can do is speak in gibberish. And particularly ones where it's almost like a press conference style sort of thing. Someone's speaking gibberish and someone's asked to translate that. Almost as if, so like, what is kind of what's going on here, what's going on here sort of thing. And it's leads into gig leads to giggles, depending on, you could have really long sentences of gibberish and all your translator says is hi. That's it. That's the nature of the concept of that game, gibberish. And it's, well, I can't remember what it's called, but where you have to speak in gibberish and all you get is a hi as a res after about like a minute of speaking gibberish.
Called gibberish, isn't it? Isn't that what the game's called? I think.
I absolutely love gibberish because it means that I can focus on physicality, so that if it's like an improv scene, you want to communicate a feeling or a secret or a confrontation of sorts or a confrontation of crisis, things like that. And without words, it's really cool because then you can play around with tone, intonation, speed, lack of speed, the movements of your arms, how big your eyes get, or how you tilt your head. You have to rely on those things instead of actual sounds you're making by way of words, because if that's taken away, then you really get to exercise the others. So it's an exercise in being expressive, so I absolutely love it.
I really like people's interpretation of the gibberish language. And we can welcome Stu back, by the way. He is back. Huzzah!
Hello.
Hello, hello. So we're just talking about
This
giggling.
was about dance, not chicken, more chicken thighs.
So yeah, we're talking about gibberish. So what I like about gibberish is people's different interpretation of how to do it. So some people will be like flippity flippity flip, and other people are like da, 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 da. So it's the sort of their gibberish language can be very different from each other, which is often entertaining to watch how people are going to actually make the gibberish. Any thoughts on gibberish, Stu?
My mind is full of gibberish. You've probably mentioned it, but I love the game. Is it an interpreter? So someone speaks gibberish, and then someone interprets in proper English or Spanish, whatever language it is. I love that game. We don't do it enough.
We
Yeah.
should.
As we're talking about it, I'm thinking, yeah, we haven't done that for ages. So,
No, it's a great game.
yeah.
Let's.
Yes, let's. Yeah.
Yes, let's.
Right, we're going to move on to our final word, which is global.
Whoa. Okay. Global is what happened in 2020, I imagine, and is the reason why I have had the opportunity to meet so many improvisers who are not necessarily in the same time zone because of the lockdown. Everybody was stuck at home, so that's one good thing that happened for the improv community. Otherwise, I wouldn't know the likes of Ari, Carla, Helena, like so many people I would never have met, including you, Ian.
Oh,
I
good. I
would never
knew
have
my
met
name
you.
was going to feature on the list.
You were in a different country, Ian. You were in Wales and
was
Seki
well
was in
away.
England.
Yeah, never mind time zone, language and mountain sizes.
One of the best things I've ever seen was at the Ireland International Festival, Improv Festival. And at the end of the night, at the end of the performances, they did a jam where anyone could take part. So they got people into threes and told them, don't go with anyone you know, find people that you don't know. And the
Yes.
scenes were playing out in the great. And then three people came onto the stage, and they were all from different countries. I think there's definitely Spanish in there. Probably one of the Nordic countries and Southeast Asia or something like that. But they played out a scene, but they didn't do it in English. They all spoke their own language,
Oh, cool.
and it worked. It was funny. It was everyone could follow what was happening. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. But completely global, except it was in the same room. But everyone just spoke the same language, and it worked. I don't know how it worked, but it was great to see. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Might be the highest form of gibberish ever, then.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
That reminds me of something you did once, Seki, because you played
With Jay.
with Jay and Siddharth, and it was like a global competition sort of thing, was it? But
It was in America, so I had to be up at like Daft AM to
yeah.
join. Yeah.
What is the name of that game that you played? It escapes me in the moment. But,
I can't remember.
dimensions, you're in different dimensions. So there's one person that is playing two separate scenes at the same time, but didn't you play it where it was in different languages?
That's a separate game, but because there were three of us, two of
Okay.
us were from the Philippines and one was from India, we discussed doing a scene where it would be in our respective languages. As it happened, Jay and I speak the same language and Siddharth does not. So we had this really cool, as I recall, a scene where Jay and I spoke in Tagalog and then in English. And yeah, it's I know exactly what Stu has just described because the fun in that is really, really, yeah, it's amazing what not knowing actual words but kind of knowing the subtext, it makes every scene pop, every story pop, really.
There's something just magical about it. It's just how does it work? What it does, it's just fantastic.
There you
I
go.
think
again, global. It's going back to my experience, the experience of the Nottingham the festival, that the Robin Hood because festival, because the group who were after, we were obviously representing the UK as the Oikers, and the group who were immediately after us were from Sweden, and it's the fact that they were like. They were really great about like I think didn't they get to see part of our show, part of the show while before they went on, or well, to be honest, I can't remember if they managed to get to see anything after well, before they came on, and we were like, We were like, really liked your shirt. They did a, I think, a long form set or something like that. And
Yeah, they heard us because they had to wait backstage, but then we snuck out and then went round and we saw them.
yeah, now again, that was again on a global impact that improv has.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up there. But as we just mentioned, global, and you mentioned festival, as we do have a few of the Oikers here, we can properly just talk about a show that we've got coming up at the Liverpool Improvisation Festival. It's on the 20th of April at 1:30 p.m. at the, what's the name of the theatre? Unity Theatre. That's correct, isn't it?
That's
Yeah.
that is correct.
And if people go to either the Liverpool Improvisation Festival website or Facebook or any of their social media, or to the Oikers website or to our Facebook, then there's links to the tickets there. Tickets are £7, £6 concessions. And our show is called Fruit Smoothie, and it's basically 45 minutes of short form fun. So I'm just going to ask you all to sum it up in one sentence. What can people expect from the Fruit Smoothie show from the Oikers?
It's part of your five a day.
I would put essential in there, Dave. It's an essential part of your final day.
It will be unapologetically short form.
Yeah. You got one, Stu?
Have you got half an hour? And I'll take you right through it. It's going to be funny. It's going to be silly. It's going to be amazing. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll want to puke. It's got everything, and it keeps you regular as well, because it's the fruit smoothie. We just go straight through you. That's what we do.
Well, yeah. So if people want to come and see us be silly live on stage, then get your tickets now. So thank you very much. That was the letter G in our A to Z. Thank you very much to Seki, Dave, and Stu.
Oh, do
Yay!
it again. We're waving, everyone. We're waving.
It's the waving.
Well, thank you so much to Seki, to Dave, and to Stu for coming on there. It's always great fun to talk to the Oikers. And because I'm jumping back into the A to Z of improv and I love having these conversations, it was really great to talk all things G with those fruity and friendly Oikers. Now, as we mentioned towards the end of that chat there, the Oikers are performing at the Liverpool Improvisation Festival, which is coming up very soon. We gave you all of the information there. So if you can't remember, go back and check it out and see what we said. Also, check out everything to do with the Liverpool Improvisation Festival on all of the social medias, and you'll find information on how to get tickets for the shows and for the workshops. There's loads of great shows happening, loads of great workshops happening, so keep checking all of the relevant social medias for Liverpool Improvisation Festival, or even go to their website. Just Google it if you want to find it, because you'll find all the information there. Lots of exciting improv coming to Liverpool in April. Now, if you're interested in getting into improv or are already involved in improv and want to try out a different improv scene, then all of the information you need can be found at www.liverpoolcomedyimprov.co.uk. You can also check us out on Facebook by searching for Liverpool Comedy Improv, and on X and Instagram we are at Liv Comedy Improv. If you want to follow this show specifically, just go to Facebook and search for the Liverpool Comedy Improvcast, and you'll find all the things you need for the show there. If you are a member of the LCI community and you'd like to be a guest on the show, then please get in touch with me or with Emma Bird, and we'll make arrangements as soon as possible. I am happy to say I do have some brand new people on my list of guests. It's just a case of me getting around to them soon, but these are some of the people that have been involved in a long form course recently, or some of the ones that were involved in the beginners course. So some that have just tried improv for the very first time. So I'm very excited to talk to all of these wonderful people soon. And of course, we've got more A to Z episodes coming up as well. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, as always, I ask, that you leave us 5 stars and a lovely little positive review, because there's little things like that that really help to boost the show and get our name out there. If you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on X, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and even TikTok. I think that pretty much covers it. I am at Ian Luke Jones everywhere. That's IAINLUKE Jones. And if you want to find all things me just in one place, just go to my website. It's ianlukejones.com, and you will find links to all things that I'm up to. And yeah, you can follow my voice acting journey as well. Read some of my blogs. I'm really loving all the voice acting stuff I'm doing right now, and I've got some more great stuff sort of in the pipeline coming up in terms of things that I'm going to be lending my voice to. So yeah, keep checking out my website for updates. And that is pretty much it. I just want to thank you for listening. I always appreciate you coming back if you're a returning listener, and I always appreciate you if you are a first-time listener as well, and I hope that you do come back. So thank you very much. It's been a fun one, and I look forward to seeing you all again in a couple of weeks. I won't see you, will I? I never see you. I'm just a voice in your ears. I look forward to you listening to me again in a couple of weeks. Maybe that's how it should be. I don't know. Anyway, before I go, here are some words that are wise, wise, wise. Always remember, whatever the situation, to treat life like improv. And yes, and...